I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We have an interesting program today in that we have a lot of different clips, interesting clips, that I'd like for you to listen to and then respond to. Also, for those of you who've been asking about the upcoming information that I'm going to be releasing on women's health issues and how to survive no matter what illness you have, I'll be giving you a full report on all that and the different abstracts I'm going to be publishing. A lot of information. I've been working on it for 4 years. It's coming up to about another month, and it's all complete. We're talking about thousands of pages of information. All the information is supported by footnotes, thousands of footnotes from the Library of Medicine. So you've got a condition, we're going to offer you some alternative solutions. We begin today with University of Paris. Long-term antioxidant supplementation is linked to better memory. The results of this French, what is called a SUVI Max trial, indicate that supplementating with antioxidants could help you if you're between, let's say, 35 and 45 years of age to maintain your memory skills that are often declining with age. Here's what they say. They say, quote, this is from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Oxidative stress and pro-inflammatory states were hypothesized to play a central role in dementia and the decline of age-related cerebral function through lipid peroxidation. And then they took a look at, well, what can help this? Well, there were 4,447 participants in this 45 to 60, and they found that, you guessed it, as little as 6 milligrams of beta-carotene, one-half of a 16-ounce glass for 8 ounces of vegetable juice would do better. 120 milligrams of vitamin C. How about 2 to 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C? 30 milligrams of vitamin E, 100 micrograms of selenium, I would suggest 200 micrograms, and 20 milligrams of zinc. That's fine. So we're talking about vitamin C, beta-carotene, vitamin E, selenium, and zinc. And 4 tests of cognitive performance were administered beginning at 5 years following the end of the treatment period, where participants who took the antioxidants on a daily basis had significantly better episodic memory and semantic fluency scores, while verbal memory scores improved among the antioxidant group substantially. So, one more reason why there's good science to take your supplements. And by the way, one of the people in the audience emailed me about the amount of vitamin C, and they're claiming that you don't need anything more than 250 milligrams of vitamin C per day. I don't know where they got that information, but clearly it came from someone who does not have a background in nutritional biochemistry and also clinical experience, because I can tell you not a single one of the people who had advanced AIDS or cancer would have survived on just that amount. But by giving increased intravenous amounts, all 2,000, mind you, this has never been done in American history, 2,000 individuals, not with just HIV positive, but otherwise asymptomatic, they all had disease, and some were near death. They all reversed their disease, they all were healthy, and followed for 15 years. And that's with intravenous high-dose vitamin C, and then in between, taking oral dose of vitamin C. The same was true for advanced breast cancer. I remember once there was this woman was sitting in the reception area, and all the our 22 medical staff were all very busy, and she seemed a little nervous, and I went over and introduced myself, and I said, what are you here for? And she said, well, I have a terminal illness, and I've tried everything I'm supposed to do in the orthodox model, but it didn't work. Cancer is spreading, now stage 4. And other places in the body is metastasized. And she said, all I can think about is I'm going to die. All I can think about, and I'm 31 years old, and all I can think about is all the things that I will not have done in my life and all the things I have done I can't do again. I'll just be gone. The conversations I won't have, the people I won't be with. And she just went through this kind of letting it all out. And then I said, well, I want you to meet someone. So I introduced her to a doctor who was there from the Albert Ellis Center. Very nice guy, Dr. Donald Mullen. And I said, Don, I said, needless to say, she is very afraid because Orthodox medicine says nothing else will work. Put your life in order. And so she's here because a friend of hers said that she hears that people here have a second chance. So Don took her in and talked with her, and he was a humanistic psychologist. And when she came out about an hour later, she came over to me, she had a smile. I said, okay, how do you feel now? And she said, I feel there's hope. I said, of course there's hope. But I've opened a place and worked it 12 hours a day, and if there was no hope, I said, why don't you take some time and go before you see the doctor, get your treatment started. Why don't you, in orientation, why don't you talk with some of the patients? In this room, we have advanced AIDS patients. They would all die. And all right, and they tried AZT and DDI and DDC and prednisone and didn't work. And in this room, we have people, and there happens to be three people in there. Go in and talk with them who have conditions that you might find of interest. And everyone in the center has this open policy. They talk. They have nothing to hide. And so she did. And 16 months later, she was free of her cancer. Now, why do I share that? I share that because the people who think that just tiny amounts of nutrients are all you need, these are unfortunately deadly errors in judgment. Now, you can have your politics. That's your business. You can be an ideologue. That's your business. I don't care. But don't try to bring your ideologue and politics into what you don't know and have no experience in, when those of us who do save lives, and we're not doing it the Orthodox manner, and I pride myself in not doing anything Orthodox, because if I did, you'd all be dead. Because that's what happens when people are terminally ill, because I only work with terminally ill people. And lo and behold, well, why is such a high percentage alive and well 5 years later? So for those of you who are so certain about how much vitamin C you need, and all the rest is just wasted, it is not. You have a difference in need depending upon what you're faced with, what your age is, the state of your immune system, the compounding deficiencies that are synergistic. If you're deficient in vitamin D3 and deficient in vitamin C and selenium together, you've got a lot of problems with cancer coming at you. So only those of us who've had the experience outside of the Orthodox model, and I teach Orthodox doctors. I spent a whole day as a continuing education expert in California teaching doctors about nutrition therapy, and none of them had this knowledge, you know, and hopefully they used it. But we haven't used acupuncture. We haven't used Ayurvedic medicine. We haven't used naturopathic medicine. We haven't used energy medicine. We haven't used body-mind medicine. We haven't used herbal medicine. We haven't used Bach flower remedies. We haven't used homeopathy. We haven't used modified intermittent fasting. None of the things that really work and that are non-toxic and have thousands upon thousands of articles in the peer-reviewed journals have we used. So if you haven't used something and you've never had a patient that has reversed disease, and with an alternative model, then why do we listen to the people who are the so-called skeptics on Wikipedia and elsewhere, the quackbusters, who've never treated a person, don't know anything about what they're talking about, are functionally illiterate, and yet they're the ones that everyone follows, including the mainstream media. One more reason not to trust and walk away from Wikipedia. But more on that coming up. I promise you, a lot more on Wikipedia coming up. Hopefully at the end of this week, but if not, the very beginning of next week. And everything I'm going to say on the air, I'm sending in advance to the chief attorney for Wikipedia Foundation. The pushback begins. Now, so if this study showed that oxidative stress, which is something that the more things you don't do right, the more oxidative stress you have, for example, sedentary lifestyle. If you're not up walking every 2 hours, doing something to get your blood circulating, to breathe deeply, to reflect upon life and the meaning and purpose each day, and then put a smile on your face because you're doing something that honors life, honors you, even if other people, what the hell are you doing that for? Why are you happy? Why are you smiling? You have no right to smile. You're white. Oh, okay, if that's what you think. What do you hate about yourself so much you're willing to project upon innocent people? But we don't ask that question, do we? We don't ask the right questions because we're afraid of what people will think. Well, if you're afraid of what people think, so you stay mute when you should be speaking the truth to idiocy, then what do you think's happening in your body when you're holding on to your rage, your anger, your disappointment, your jealousy, your envy, your low self-esteem, living someone else's life for them and their expectations of you, but not being asked, Bob, Linda, what would you like to do with your life? What are your dreams, aspirations, inspirations? What's important to you? No, we don't hear that, do we? No, not in today's world, we don't. Instead, we heard, good that you're going to get married, have this amount of children, live in this neighborhood, and live this life that we expect of you. Be the good daughter, be the good son. Well, how about being a good to yourself person first? So you don't have all that frustration that we see only at the end of life. If you doubt me, ask any hospice nurse. I've had hospice nurses work for me, so I get this all the time. What is the last thing a person says generally before they die? I wished I would have done it differently, meaning I wished I'd lived my life differently. But almost everybody who lives life succeeds at most of the parts of their life. They're a good husband or good wife or good teacher or good. But does that mean they did right by their own dreams? And if not, you're creating stress. Even if you smile on the outside, if you're angry on the inside, you're creating oxidative stress. And that's pro-inflammatory. And that impacts your brain. And that leads to dementia. And if you're that frustrated, are you going to be taking a good, healthy diet? Most awfully, not. So you see how all these seemingly disparate moving pieces of the puzzle of life, they actually can come together if you use simplicity and common sense. It has nothing to do with education. To the contrary, the more educated, my personal experience of being a professor teaching at the college and university level for 45 years tells me that the dumbest people I've ever met in my life were the most educated, including Nobel Prize winners, who were personal friends of mine, that we'd hang out together and talk. Kind of sounds like an oxymoron. Well, how's that possible? Because once a person develops a reputation and a success in a given field, they don't want to change any part of it because better the devil I know than the devil I don't. If I can protect what I know, then why should I make myself vulnerable and grow and be open to challenging my knowledge? What if some of my knowledge is wrong at this point? What if some of my beliefs are wrong? What if some of my beliefs are superstitions passed on epigenetically, and I'm just acting out without thinking? What if I don't use reason, but rather react to everything at the ego level? What if I'm afraid of losing reputation or something? Then what protection will I offer myself? Denial? Go along with everyone? Consensus? Yeah, if you say so. If you say we all need 1,700 vaccines within the next hour because Anthony Fauci said so in a dream last night, I guess it's right. And all the people in the media say, yes. Good for you, God of all science, Anthony Fauci. No, he's a twerp. He's an idiot. Let him come on this show and debate me. Anthony, we have a history, don't we? Me curing 2,000... keeping alive 2,000 people who had full-blown AIDS with no drugs, and then reversing 18 of them. And how many people died because of you advocating and insisting upon AZT? Yeah, we have a history. But you had the media on your side. We had the truth on our side. And the media won, and the truth lost. And that's true of every aspect of medicine, every aspect of science, every aspect of our lives, every aspect of education. We're seeing it now. Now, why am I saying all this at this moment? Because of one ill-informed person who decided that taking more than 250,000 milligrams a day was dangerous without looking at the volumes of science, the 50,000 plus articles on vitamin C, and then looking at the clinical experience where diseases would have taken the patient, had vitamin C, intravenous glutathione, and other nutrients not intervened in that person's upset biochemistry, in which case that person's alive and well today. And other people are using that reduction in oxidative therapy. And when you have when you have oxidative stress, you have inflammation all over your body. And what does oxidative stress do? It creates damage to your DNA. And what's that do? It destroys the DNA's capacity to repair itself. And what's that do? It prevents you from being able to be healthy. You're then in a slow decline down, but you maladapt to it. Well, I'm overweight, so let's just buy bigger clothes. Okay, not a good decision. Your freedom of choice to do so. And then surround yourself with other people who are doing the same thing. The fact that a lot of people do something doesn't mean that it's right. And science today is wrong, 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 wrong when it comes to almost anything involving our health. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there were people out there telling you, hey, let's do it right. Let's take all the senior citizens who have comorbidities, who are most susceptible to dying of their comorbidities, and work on those comorbidities. We've never done this in American history. We've never taken a disease and showed people actually what to do once you have the disease. It could be helping you. It's all medicine is the only choice you have. And then let's take a look at how many people die each year from cancer only following orthodoxy. Doctor, whatever you say, I'm going to do. The doctor smiles and says, don't worry. We've got this new drug, this, and 550,000 people die every year, more or less. So over the last 20 years, orthodox medicine has supervised, benefited from, profited from, bragged about the success of 10 million Americans dying of the disease that they're supposed to be specialists in, masters of. What kind of world do we live in when you regard someone as superior and defer to them and almost have a cult mindset towards them when they're killing so many people? Wow. This is why I do not trust human nature at this time, because conditioning and inappropriate choices, the lack of reason, the lack of scholarship, the lack of thinking, the lack of silence, people can't stop talking for 2 seconds and almost all of it's gibberish, and actually looking at their own life and saying, what the hell's gone wrong with my life? Go to the dark side. Look at the dark side, because that's where liberation healing comes from. You cannot heal, in my personal experience, you cannot help a person heal when they're always acting like a victim, always from the dark side, always a reason to resist, always a reason to dig their heels in and say, well, no, I don't know. Instead of coming from the light side where the spirit is, and that's the energy that heals. It's really that simple. Occam's razor. The answer that is most appropriate in most cases is the simplest one. Never confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. But will we learn? We cannot learn. We will not learn. It is not humanly possible at this time to learn. Why not? Because the institutions that control every aspect of our lives and wants to control even more have too much financial interest involved in what you're doing. They're happy with your lifestyle. Eat that fried chicken. Eat 16 hamburgers. Drink 17 milkshakes in the next hour because it's a buffet from hell, but it's only $9.95. I'm going for that. Do you think these people are unaware of this? Do you think they eat the same diet that they advocate through their corporate interests and their profiteering? No. The hospitals, that no one used to go broke going to a hospital up through the 1960s. And yet here are the Democrats, what fools, and the Republicans, idiot fools. Where is universal health care? That's a reasonable approach. Well, we can't have that. Why not? Save $1.7 trillion. Read my article on how to do it. Can't do that. No, because we made $4 trillion last year, and we make more this year. And if you have a snake bite, it's $155,000. If you have a stomach ache, because just going into an emergency room with a stomach ache, having no medicine, nothing done, it's $10,000. Who makes that money? We do. Who's we? The equity partners, the ones who have a present at PBS New York, Channel 13. I see. and also Sharon Rockefeller of the Rockefeller fan. You know what great reputation the Rockefellers have? Yeah. No, they don't. And look at the father of the Rockefellers. He founded the entire pharmaceutical industry and created American Cancer Society. Well, so gee whiz. So you make money off bad choices. You don't make money on good choices. You don't make money from people who are healthy. You don't make money people drinking wheatgrass juice, running, jogging, meditating, yoga. You don't make money from that. You don't have power over them. To the contrary, the more a person does on their own, the healthier they become, the more calm they are facing crisis, they become disempowered to you because you can't manipulate them. The average person, the morbid obese person, the person with diabetes and heart disease and pre-cancer or cancer condition, oh, there you got total control. Therefore, you can charge whatever you want. And all members of Congress are corrupt as hell. And we all know that. And the members of the media are even more corrupt because they're smarter than members of Congress. They're better educated. They have more resources. And therefore, their corruption is maniacal corruption. And they should not be forgiven for this, for lying to us about everything. Weapons of Mass Destruction, Judith Miller, New York Times. By the way, I just watched it the other night. It was called The Green Zone, with Matt Damien. It's a slightly fictionalized story about what really happened when a group went over and tried to find the weapons of mass destruction and couldn't. And a mythical reporter for the Wall Street Journal was there hoping they would find him because she was the one who wrote the stories and her source was there and he was utterly corrupt. And so think of how many people lost their lives. Think of all the mistakes we made. Think of all the tens of millions of people who had to be relocated. Think of the depleted uranium that is haunting the biochemistry of every pregnant woman, creating Cyclops baby and babies born with no brain. And not a word of this in the mainstream media. And who quit their jobs and out of shame and said, I cannot be held accountable because I lied? No one. No one. And yet everything was lies. And so the very people lied about that, lied about Afghanistan, lied about Syria, lied about Iraq, lied about Venezuela, lied about Ukraine. So then who's the problem here? The people wanting to control your life, lying to you about everything, the media that lies and puts on the lies, and then attacks anyone with the truth, or you? Which side of the equation are you on? If you're using their products, if you're eating their food, junk food, if you're drinking their beer or alcohol, if you're buying their Bangladesh-created clothes, if you're watching their reality shows, if you're watching their violent shows, who's the problem? I'm interested in your solutions to these. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So, what we've learned is, don't listen to the authorities when it comes to supplementation. Get your blood tested. It's not expensive. See if you're deficient in anything. If you are, then work with a qualified nutritionist, someone, a holistic nurse, someone who has a background in nutritional biochemistry that can help rebalance you. All right? Now, from the University of Bath, beautiful town, by the way, in the United Kingdom, mindfulness should be about more than just me. Well, of course it should be, but it hasn't been because once again, we're only interested in ourselves, right? Unfortunately, not everybody. I hope we have a clip. Kyle, there was a clip. Yesterday I asked Dylan to play it, and you talk about touching your heart. Wow, this touches your heart. If you can find that clip, it's about a 60-second clip. It's about a homeless guy. I want the world to see there's some really good people out there, and they care about those who are suffering. But I want you to go to PRN.live, scroll down to archives, and scroll down to Gary Knoll so you can watch this short clip. It'll touch your heart in a good way. In any case, we've had too many people only thought about themselves, you know, and not about what it meant to spread mindfulness as a way of taking the gifts you have, and we all have gifts, and sharing them with others who may not have those gifts and need a hand. But over the years around the world, there has been a growing interest in this practice of mindfulness, which encourages people to pause, good, be fully present in the moment, excellent, and explore how to be less reactive or overwhelmed by whatever is going on around you and within you. Mindfulness doesn't change the consequences of issues that we cannot control. Too much stuff going on that I as an individual can't control, but it does change how I want to respond to it. Mindfulness origins stem from Eastern philosophy and Buddhism, where it is integrated in a broader ethical framework. However, a new review from the Unique University of Bath Center for Mindfulness and Community challenges how the practice has been evolved in the West and how it has in part been distorted by the self-help community. It suggests that instead of people using mindfulness to focus on their, mine, me, my role in relation to others, more often they focus upon only themselves and their self-improvement. The analysis from a team of psychologists and therapists at Bath Center for Mindfulness and Community suggests the broader meaning and applications of mindfulness are often lost, and that the true benefits of the practice in developing a deeper sense of reflection and connection are missed. This was published, by the way, in the Journal of Contemporary Psychotherapy. So we need to focus upon helping the natural world. Therefore, when you're doing mindful meditation, think about the world you live in. What can you do? By the way, there's a small country of the 54 countries in Africa. One is in the northwest landlocked, Niger. And it's about 70% more or less desert. And yet, get this, the very poor people of Niger have planted 200 million trees. They've taken a whole lot of desert and turned it into beautiful farmland where they're able to grow crops that feed everyone. And that's important. And they're showing how to take degraded land, sand, and convert it back into rich soil. Well, if they can do it, why can't everyone in this audience suggest at the local community level, maybe even a block level with your school or county officials, to help do our part with global warming? There are certain types of plant that have high levels of carbon capture and other plants that have low levels. Like hemp has a high level and grows very fast. So why aren't we growing hemp fields that could capture carbon? That's something local communities and people could do. They could help plant. They do it. In fact, one guy in Australia, and by the way, he's the guy that goes all over the world. And in fact, he's been in Saudi Arabia. He's trying to turn the Sahara. And by the way, Sahara is the largest desert in the world. How big is the Sahara Desert? Well, if you put the entire United States, including Hawaii and Alaska, in the Sahara, you'd have a lot more room left over. That's how big the Sahara Desert is. And yet, this guy did, he was the first person in Australian history to go around and take desert areas and make them into beautiful forest with water and streams. And now he helped them do it in Niger, and he's doing it in other countries. I'm going to bring him on to do a discussion of this, because we've got to start working on the solutions. But mindfulness allows you to do that. Mindfulness says, okay, I want to be mindful to the world I live in, all the people. I look at them as sacred human beings, not as objects. What can I do to help them? That's where it begins. So use mindfulness in a good way. Also, for those of you who want to reduce your tension or increase your energy levels, the Komenus University in Slovakia and another university in Munster in Germany found that using an extract of French oak wood, an extract, improved energy, tiredness, and tension. A 4-week of supplementing with this extract of French oak wood was associated with an improvement, substantial improvement, in tiredness, energy, and reduced tension. And that's good. That's something new, brand new. And also, let's try to get people to reduce their chances of a stroke. Major killer. University of Michigan has an article in Stroke, the Journal of the American Heart Association, that gives you a different way of looking at it. Yes, diet, low sodium, higher potassium, rich foods like coconut water. Start your day with 8 ounces of coconut water, you get about 450 to 500 milligrams of potassium. This is immediately bioavailable. That's terrific. Celery seed extract each day in the morning and the evening, that's terrific to lower blood pressure. And a good, healthy, clean diet will also do it. But what do you think causes more high blood pressure than anything else? Stress? Anger? Yelling? Arguing? Screaming? Raising your voice? Because what you're doing is it changes the electrical impulse or pulses to the heart. And that can cause all forms of irregular heartbeat, which can lead to a stroke. So one of the ways of dealing with this, according to the University of Michigan, is a positive outlook on life can help you lower your risk of having a stroke. Yes, in an observational study, a nationally representative group of 6,000 adults over the age of 50 rated their optimism levels on a 16-point scale. Each point increased in optimism corresponded to a 9% decrease in acute stroke risk over a 2-year follow-up period. So if you've got 16 points and each point is 9% decrease, you could decrease your risk of a stroke substantially. Quote, our work suggests that people who expect the best things in life actively take steps to promote health. All right. That was according to the lead psychology doctor at University of Michigan. So optimism. And also, the newest study from Virginia Tech School of Medicine, published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, shows that brains with Alzheimer's disease have subnormal levels of important dietary oxidants. Once again, let's say you have a common cold. Let's say you have the flu. What do you think the amount of vitamin C is going to be before the vitamin C triggers enough of an antiviral response to bring it down so you can overcome it? That's why a glass of orange juice, fresh made orange juice, grapefruit juice every day, so important. Well, what they're showing in this study is that the brain levels of lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N, zeaxanthin, Z-E-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N, lycopene, there's your watermelon, there's your raspberries, there's your red grapes, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, and vitamin E in Alzheimer's disease are half those in normal brains. So what does this say? It says start taking these on a daily basis. All right? And if you have Alzheimer's or dementia, and Alzheimer's is just one form of dementia, that's important. Oh, by the way, from MD Anderson Cancer Center at the University of Texas, gardening activities reduce lung cancer risk by 50%. How about that? Not only is having a green thumb a great way to stay healthier and happier, but new research shows it can actually protect you from cancer. In fact, the risk of cancer was reduced by 50% in lifelong non-smokers and those who gardened twice a week. Wow, something important, something easy, something we can all do is within our power. But you have to have a positive attitude. You have to put a smile on your face. Be honest about the problems of life. Don't blink, don't walk away, don't close doors, don't shut conversation when you haven't resolved issues from your past. Instead, resolve the issues. Regressive hypnosis is one of the best ways. And then have something that is a positive virtue to live for. Something that not only will you benefit from, but you can then play it forward to help others. When you have a gift, give a gift. That's important. That's the latest on health and healing. I'd like to hear from you later on the program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to have some short clips. I think you'll find these of interest, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Knoll. Got an important article coming your way, hopefully on Friday, if not Monday. And I just want to show you some short clips, because understand what's behind the clip. The insurance companies are now telling the Maui residents they have zoning infractions on their land, and hence none of them are going to be paid for the damage and loss of their home. Now, of course, the President of the United States was doing the best he could. He was at a beach relaxing. Why should he concern himself with the disaster going on over there? What, 2,720-some homes destroyed and over 100 people dead? Yeah, but that's not a priority. So he's going to give them $700. Oh, that'll help when it's about $5.5 billion in loss. But it's the insurance companies. And ask yourself this, and for the lawyers in the audience, and we have a lot of lawyers listening, do you see this as an opportunity to go in and sue the companies? Because if they've been collecting premiums for the homes all along, and now they say, but we found zoning infractions, something about who actually owns the land that the home's on, then why did you take their money all this time and now you don't want to honor it? And also, immediately after the people's homes burned down, immediately all these capitalist vultures came in to buy up all the burned down homes, because now the people cannot rebuild because of these zoning infractions. Wow, listen to this. Let's go to the clip, please.
Not that long ago, Hawaiian government officials in the areas that were just affected by the wildfires passed a law saying that that land could not be redistricted for new building permits unless some sort or some type of a serious natural disaster occurred. Serious natural disaster occurred. And what did we have happen through those three districts of very sacred land to the Hawaiians? A very serious natural disaster. I'm not going to get into space lasers and all of that shit, but people called their insurance companies after the fire, and the insurance companies, for the first time, informed them that there was zoning infractions on their land, so they would not honor their insurance policies. And within 24 hours of these people losing their homes, the same developers who the Hawaiian elders fought in court to have that law passed are already calling these people and making them offers for their homes. This is what happens when the government...
Bring it down. Thank you. Okay, this is just one example. I live down here in Florida. I have an animal sanctuary of rescuing and recovering animals. I've been hit by two Category 5 hurricanes. Fortunately, because I am a preventative-minded person, I put things in place so I didn't lose my electricity, didn't lose water. None of the animals were harmed. But the insurance company offered me only 3%, 3% of the damage. Well, I sued and I won 97%. My neighbors, they got little tiny checks and they just accepted. Nobody fought. This is the insurance industry. This is Berkshire Hathaway being in the insurance industry, and they're leaving Florida. They don't want to cover anymore. So you think you have hurricane insurance, but you don't have water damage insurance, or you have water damage, but you don't have a wind damage. No, you should have all damage covered. And they don't tell you any of this. And then they go out of the state. So now a lot of places don't have any insurance at all. So just be aware of where you move now. It'll make a difference. Also, we want to give a shout out to some of the really good people in this world who are standing up and speaking out, risking their lives or their reputation. One is a member of the European Parliament, Christine Anderson. And by the way, on yesterday's program, when I had the gentleman on talking, David on talking about COVID and all the patents, what I should have framed that as, he was invited from members of the European Union to come to the headquarters. They set aside a conference room, and a group that supported freedom of speech and the truth about COVID were in that room. And you saw the presentation, you saw all of the documents, all the patents, and but there's over 700 members of the European Union. Probably 95% do not agree with him, would not attend, so he wasn't invited into the General Assembly, and because they're still on the side of their countries tell them, this is what you vote for. But when you've got Sinclair and some of the other outspoken people, she from Ireland, Claire Daly, they're firebrands. Good for them. And Christine Anderson from Germany, she's a firebrand. We need more firebrands. We need less complicity. By the way, I'm sure you've seen this. I'm sure it's, did you ever wonder when someone is speaking and they're speaking longer than 5 minutes, which is generally what every committee gives you to talk in whatever round you're in, but someone's going on for 10 minutes and they've got charts and photographs. What you don't see is that's in the, either the Senate or the House, and it's an empty chamber. There's no one else in there. And you've also, if you've noticed some of the hearings, the moment Matt Taibbi and was up there giving his testimony, after he was attacked as being, you know, a so-called journalist, and he responded, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, if you saw the camera angle she was on, she didn't care about his answer. She did her job. She was a good Democrat trying to denigrate a former good Democrat and liberal. So that's kind of the internecine conflict when a good Democrat and a good liberal is attacked by a corporate Democrat and a Clinton-supporting Democrat and a neocon Democrat and a corporatist Democrat. But you didn't see that unless you saw the other angle. And then they just get up and leave the chamber. Sometimes the only people you see, and they do a tight shot of this, is the person asking questions, the person's answering the questions, but everyone else just got up and left. They do this all the time. And they've done it also at the European Union. They did it in Parliament, where one speaker got up and talked what was wrong with the science of the vaccines mandatory, and almost every single person except four in all of Parliament gets up and they leave. Well, that's what they did with David also, but he got his message out and we covered it, and that's what is important. Now we're going to hear from German's Member of Parliament, Christine Anderson. She is a firebrand and she is a hero.
This whole COVID madness, this so-called pandemic, it was just a test balloon, a gigantic test balloon. Well, for what, you ask? Well, to see how far they could go, to see what exactly they would have to do to get free individuals in a free and democratic society to consent to being forced into compliance. That's what they were trying to establish. That's what they were trying to figure out. And they have figured it out. Trust me. They are much smarter now. The goal ultimately is to transform our free and democratic societies into totalitarian societies. Their goal is to strip each and every one of us of our fundamental rights of freedom, democracy, the rule of law. They want to get rid of all of this. This whole COVID thing had never anything to do with public health. It never had anything to do with breaking waves. It always had to do with breaking people in order to make us a part of a mindless, malleable mass, which they can totally control, and we will be completely dependent upon this globalitarian elite. So I'm really imploring the people and all the peoples around the world, for God's sake, stop giving your democratically elected governments the benefit of the doubt. They are not deserving of that. They are not. Stop rationalizing whatever your government is doing. Stop rationalizing and come up with some good intentions. They have no good intentions. Never, as I said before, in the entire history of mankind, there has never been a political elite concerned about the well-being of regular people. And it isn't any different now. Why should it stop giving them the benefit of the doubt? Because I can tell you, you cannot comply your way out of a tyranny. It is impossible. Trying to do so, you will only feed a gigantic alligator in the hopes of being eaten last. But guess what? Your turn will come, and then you will be the one swallowed up. I also have to ask the people, end your silence. Speak up. For God's sake, stop complying. Start rebelling. They're out to get you if you do not resist.
She's absolutely correct. But being a good Democrat and good Republican, you will not resist, no matter how atrocious the crimes against humanity of those who lead you are. Wow. And she was one of Christine Anderson from Germany, was one of the group that invited David to come over there and give his talk. And for those few who were interested in it, that message, they were taken back to their countries and the media and start investigations. For those who chose to leave the chamber and not recognize him, well, that's their choice. That's their right. I've supported Julian Assange, one of the primary people in the United States who has supported Julian Assange is Randy Credico. Randy has been very brave. He received an award for his courage in standing up, knowing that the moment you stand up against the CIA, the FBI, the establishment, you're going to get hit. They're going to do whisper campaigns, try to destroy you. In spite of all that, he's continued to maintain his presence and his voice. Roger Waters and a lot of others. But where is the so-called liberal media that used Julian Assange's materials frequently to win Pulitzer Prizes? Show me the one that's come forward to say Julian Assange's innocence. He's not been convicted of any crime, but yet he's had the last 13 years of his life destroyed. Why? Because that's the way the establishment works. So, this is a Australian, mind you, he's originally from Australia, completely corrupt government. But here's one of those members of the government who is speaking out. He is Senator Malcolm Roberts. Thank you, Mr. Roberts, for having the truth on your side while your government has no interest in helping Assange. Let's listen to this clip.
People of Queensland and Australia, I note that treatment of Julian Assange is not acceptable and should not be acceptable in a civilized society like Australia. There are two issues, Australian citizenship and did he commit crimes? Julian is an Australian citizen. No matter what he may or may not have done, Julian has the same rights as any other Australian citizen. It's terrifying that the rule of law protecting Australians from capricious government action can be trashed in this manner. Julian has lost 13 years to confinement already, and is now the United States is threatening him with life in prison. For telling the truth in exposing the murder of innocent civilians during Operation Enduring Freedom. Enduring Freedom, now that's ironic. Perhaps the United States needs a dictionary. Freedom means the right to free speech, especially for investigative journalists who investigated the US government's illegal actions. That's part of every journalist's duty, exposing illegal behavior. The US Constitution guarantees freedom of speech. American governments have trashed their nation's constitution. While freedom of speech is not enshrined in our constitution, I'm advised it is enshrined in high court rulings. Despite that, it means little, as many, including myself, discovered during COVID. Clearly, the US government is making an example of Julian Assange to dissuade other journalists from publishing the truth about other illegal US government activity. Let's connect the point about freedom of speech and COVID. We're now seeing remarkable facts emerging about big pharma, big government, big tech. Imagine if Julian had been free during COVID and WikiLeaks was functioning properly. All the documents it's taken years to start prizing out of the hands of big government, big pharma state, showing the most egregious and inhuman breaches of truth and decency, may have been brought to light much earlier. Instead, we had a compliant mouthpiece media that repeated the talking points of the pharmaceutical state. Government has three roles: protect life, protect property, protect freedom. Successive Australian and American governments are taking lives, killing people in unauthorised state-sanctioned killings, stealing property, transferring wealth from we the people to Big Pharma, removing freedom, imprisoning journalists and thereby destroying the nation's freedom and all people's and every person's freedom. Julian has suffered 13 years of deprivation of liberty for serving the country.
No, he did. But again, all the liberal media in the United States refuse to accept that Julian Assange is a hero and deserves respect. He deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. We did find the clip. Now, I hope you can watch it, because it's most impactful when you watch this. But if you don't watch it, after the clip, I'll explain what you would have seen had you watched it. But go to prn.live, scroll down to archives, scroll down to Gary's archives, and that's where you'll see it. This is a clip of a homeless person who's being met by a stranger goes over to talk with him. And he offers us some money if he'll just answer one question. That's where this begins. It's only 60 seconds long.
If you can answer one question for me, I'll give you $500.
$500 for one question?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, shoot it.
What's your biggest regret in life?
Yeah, that's easy. I started doing drugs and lost my kids after my wife passed away.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Are you still on drugs?
No, I've been clean for 2 months now. I've been working real hard, man. I want to get my kids back. I got to be there for my kids. I got to get them back because, you know, I'm their dad. You got to have them.
Do you promise you're sober?
Yes, sir. I promise.
Here you go.
Whoa, dude, you were serious?
Yeah.
Man, this is, my kids are halfway up the state, man. This is really going to help me get closer to them. Man, wow, bro. Thanks. Nobody in San Diego does this, man. Is there anything I can do to pay you back for this?
Go see your kids.
Yeah, my word, man. Thank you.
God bless you, brother.
Thanks, man.
There are a lot of good people in this world. He is one. So when you think you can't do anything, you're only one person walking down the street, you walk by people who are homeless, you don't know their story. You don't know if they're on drugs or alcohol. You don't know if they've got mental illnesses. This guy's wife died, and he couldn't handle that, went on drugs, lost his kids, and now he's homeless. Now he's got $500 to get up close to him. He's sober. That's a good thing. I'm going to end today's show. I don't have any calls coming in. I had hoped I'd get some of you to call in. And we want to tell WBI's audience you're going to leave in about a minute to go to your news. But this is important. Quote, "The worst thing any president has done in my lifetime," by Professor Victor David Hansen. Some things I agree with Dr. Hansen, others I don't. You can agree or disagree with what he has to say, but listen to what he has to say. I think there's some very profound statements in here. So we're not going to take another break. We're just going to go straight through the top of the show. Then I'll leave a minute in case anybody has a call they want to come in and share with us. Now to the clip.
When Barack Obama came into power, he did something I don't think anybody recognizes, but it was the most deleterious thing in my life that any president's done. He took the binary of the unique African-American experience, which was like no other minority. And that binary had been something that binary since the Civil War and the Civil Rights Movement had been something the United States was working and succeeding in. And he said that it's not just black versus white, it's everybody who is non-white. They're part of a collective. And all of a sudden I noticed that people who were rich farm owners with 10,000 acres from the Punjab, or a third generation Japanese optometrist, or a upper middle class professor from Brazil was telling me that he was diverse. And all of a sudden they were part of this group, and we were all going to find some type of edge. So we had Elizabeth Warren saying she was Native American. We had Rachel Dolezal saying she was black. And it became kind of a parlor game among friends of mine. They said, you know, your children have Oklahoma blood in them, Maybe they're Cherokee. Once you take a DNA and they can get a little edge. Everybody was trying to find some edge. And it shows you how racist we've become because, as you know, in the old South, everybody was doing the opposite. Everybody was scared stiff that somewhere in their past they had black blood and they had 1/16th was the rule. One drop. If you could trace a African American, then you were considered African American. Now we've gone back to the Confederate idea and just flipped it. But it's still racist. So we are we're tribal people now. And that's, there's no society, whether it's the Balkans or Rwanda, we know where that goes. We know what we have a destiny with, because everybody to survive will start being tribal. I live in a community that's 85% Latino. I don't know very many white people anymore. They mostly moved away. But at Walmart, for some strange reason, before 8 o'clock in the morning, it's all white, the vestigial population. And for the first time in my life, I walk in, and here's what happened. People don't know me. Hi, how are you? Hey, good to see you. And what they're doing is they're identifying with a shared whiteness because they feel the whole society is becoming tribal, and they're going to adopt by tribe. And I'll say to some, I don't know who you are. Why would I feel closer to that person because he happens to be white than a Mexican-American person who's conservative and shares my own view? But if that's where we're headed, and when history teaches us, once we go tribal, it's like going nuclear. Once one nation goes nuclear, when one people goes tribal, everybody's going to go tribal for defense. It happens like that. The work of a multiracial unified culture takes centuries. The work of a multicultural divisive culture can happen in 2 or 3 years. Read Thucydides if you don't believe me. When you read a historian like Thucydides, they always start with the idea that a pre-civilization, pre-modern society has no meritocracy. You hire your first cousin, or your general appearance is essential, not incidental, to who you are. And the tribe then is the enemy of progress. It's the enemy of meritocracy. I think to every country in the Middle East except Iran, when I talk to people, journalists there, they always say something. It's a constant refrain. The reason that things don't work here is because we hire our first cousin, and we don't hire the most capable person, because we judge people by their blood ties or their superficial appearance. We had been fighting with a legacy of slavery and Jim Crow in the South. We're now in 50 years since the Civil Rights Movement and affirmative action, and we were starting to realize Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream of the content of our character rather than this color of our skin. And we've gone back 50 years with this woke movement. This woke movement was not started grassroots. This is a top-down phenomenon. This is Oprah Winfrey from her $90 million estate in Montecito complaining about ill treatment to Meghan Markle in her $15 million mansion. This is Barack and Michelle Obama worth $100 million coming out and then pontificating on the unfairness as they go back to their 38-acre, $14 million Martha Vineyard estate. I could go on, but you get the picture. The BLM founder, Phyllis Queller, she's on house number 4 in Topanga Canyon. Professor Kendi, if you want to hear him, it's $20,000, $333 a minute for his advice about how you must be racist to stop racism and you must discriminate to stop discrimination. These are not revolutionaries out on the barricade. This is an elite-driven drive for the spoils of America, camouflaged as if America is culpable. When I heard General Milley and the Chief of Naval Operations and the Defense Secretary say that they were rooting out white privilege, white supremacy, and whiteness, I did think, what's going on in Afghanistan? Why we were losing Afghanistan while Joe Biden was telling us everything was okay in Afghanistan, they have 300,000 men, they have airport, why he was calling the Afghan president and stealthy saying, even if you're losing it, please lie. What was our military doing? They were cannibalizing their own ranks. And when General Austin said, we want every aspect of our military to reflect proportionality. Okay. White males, to take one example, do you really want to go down that tribal road where every single person is going to have a job based on their racial component? Because that's a trajectory to nihilism. And it's not even represented. We don't do that. We did that in the NBA when we were racist. And we had a
the NBA was not as exciting. Now we're going 76% African American. I think that's great. It's based on merit. But it violates the very canons of the left that says you cannot do that. So when I heard Austin and Mealy say that, I said, okay, white males make up 33% of the population. They've died in Iraq at 75%, and they've died in Afghanistan at 74%. Are you going to call up the Afghan airport and say, hey, anybody who's a white male, pull back. You've died and overrepresented. So it's somebody else's turn to go get killed. So you can see where we're going. The ultimate manifestation is a DNA badge. So we all try to adjudicate whether we're going to go back to the South 1/16th drop. Unless you think I'm kidding, Elizabeth Warren tried that, didn't she? And she found out she didn't even have 1/16th jaw drop, but she relied on high cheekbone. She didn't have the creativity and the imagination of Ward Churchill, who at least took the trouble to dress up as a Native American, even though he wasn't. And so that's what we're doing now. Under the racism that was in the United States, especially in the South, but it was there, people then said, I'm going to pass for white. It was a tragic experience because they thought they would get superior and discriminatory treatment. Now it's, I'm going to pass for non-white. So we come full circle.
Interesting perspective. Again, agree or disagree. My voice is a little strained because I've been from Sunday's five-hour webinar to non-stop counseling. It's a little strained. In any case, tonight, you're going to hear a really powerful show on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Insights you did not know before. Again, reframing the picture of what's happening in our world. It'll be an interesting discussion. 7 o'clock, PRN.live. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.